Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Tobe Hooper's 1982 film, Poltergeist. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
50 episodes, and I still feel empty on the inside.
It is our 50th episode. How about that? Congratulations, sir.
Why?
I don't know, because we made it this far. It's kind of impressive.
Well, if you remember, I haven't been on every episode, so.
Yeah, but, you know, you've been a driving force.
It's a technicality you got to deal with there.
Right on. Well, thanks for...
I'm going to save your congratulations for later.
Okay, all right. Until it's your specific 50th, which will be like our 54th or some random number. But thanks for holding it down in the weeks where I've been away.
I apologize. I think we actually lost listeners while you were gone, so that's on me.
I listened to those episodes, and both were entertaining.
One man's opinion.
Yeah, I don't know.
I thought they were some of the worst material I've ever come out with.
No way, man. Bernie, Weekend at Bernie's.
We tried to have Bernie on, but as the movies have told us twice, he's dead.
I really enjoyed you guys creating alternate, fake storylines for future and prequel Bernie movies. Like, yeah. You got you and Allison and Kate in that one episode talking about, Weekend of Bernie's 3, and then you and Joe in the most recent episode talking about what happens before, and somehow Bernie is dead before the original Weekend of Bernie's.
That's the twist. He's been dead the entire time.
So, yeah, I really enjoyed that. But anyway.
Shout out to Joe, episode 49, and of course, Allison and Kate, episode 48.
Yes.
Track of numerical titles.
So if you guys are just joining us for the very first time, we start every episode with the character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-NJNM or 65.
Smooth.
It does. Or 6566 for those of you who can't.
Sounds like a regular Chloe the Psychic infomercial.
What was her name? Madam Cleo, was it?
No, it was
I think it was Cleo. Yeah.
It was Cleo. I said Chloe. I apologize. Never did call the site. I believe it was Miss Cleo.
Miss, yes, you're right. You're right. Yeah.
Miss Cleo. She didn't assume anything. She wasn't a doctor. She wasn't married.
Yep, you're right. All right, well, yeah, if you are Miss Cleo listening to this, or if you just want to shoot us an email, drop us a line, you can do that at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com, and you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So the character name game for this week, I will take control of that one, and the name is Jake Weiler.
Jake, you still playing this game?
We are, yes. You took a little sabbatical from it, but we're bringing it back.
Tried to snuff it out of existence.
I know. I liked your other games, though. We'll play that in a little bit.
Love the character name game. Represent.
Yes.
Characters' names.
Got to do it. So you'll Jake come Butler. Back and guess. You'll guess which movie that character is from at the very end. So, let's go ahead and move into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, TV shows, movies, whatever, any sort of cool special events or anything. Let's start with you. What have you been consuming this week?
Let me do a couple shout-outs real quick.
Do it.
Is that okay?
Absolutely.
A couple of guests we've had on in the past, Cater Bland, episode 48, and episode, I'm going to say 17, maybe. I don't know. She's actually moving from GordonandtheWhale.com. Congratulations to, I believe, The Reject Kings? Am I right there?
It's FilmSchoolRejects.com.
Not The Reject Kings, the popular band. So check her out there. And also another guest we've had on, episode, I'm going to say, 23.7.
I think it's actually 33, but I'm not sure. But.
Ooh, Michelle Madison joined us for a review of Gamer. Mm-hmm. She has a new book out, Damn You Autocorrect. You mentioned it on our episode way back in the day, and now it's actually been published.
Good, good.
And you can order it on, I'm going to say, Amazon.com.
That sounds about right.
All right, so into the media consume section. Can I go?
Yes, please.
All right, there's a couple of things I've been watching. I mentioned this, I believe, the first time, episode 3, Hollywood Homicide.
Mm-hmm.
Rizzoli and Isles is back on the air. TNT classic all-girl detective show.
Mm-hmm.
Got a little bit of too much estrogen, but I dig it.
It's got that Lee Thompson Young little famous Jet Jackson thrown in there.
Famous Jet Jackson feel to it.
Yep.
It's got that other guy that you may recognize, and it takes place in Boston. They're still solving crimes. And it's still fairly entertaining for a midsummer
TNT show.
On TNT. Yep. Yeah. Exactly. He took the words right out of my mouth. So check it out. It's on demand. It's entertaining. Dr. Isles is hot. And you can follow her on Twitter. The character, not the actual actress, which is what NJNM podcast does. Just following the character, who is constantly advertising Monday night's episode. It's kind of obscene.
Oh, man, that's awesome. I was really – you threw me a curveball there because I was expecting you, obviously, to say that you can follow the actress, but I like it's just some guy who's running a fake
definitely a dude.
Account for the character on Twitter. But, yeah, and that character promotes a fictional show.
It's basically – it's prominently an advertisement. Like, it's just – there's no shame in this account.
Right.
Also, last week I went to the movies, saw a couple of major films.
Let's talk
Maybe we could talk about them in an after midnight episode. Went and saw Harry Potter, Deathly Hallows, Part 2.
Yes.
And I saw Captain America, Part 1.
Okay.
That's the under title. Mm-hmm. But I really want to talk about what I saw Thursday night. Zookeeper, starring the hardest working man in Hollywood, Kevin James.
Did you legitimately see that?
Yes, I did. I was not lying. Via text, Ben Pearson, I had told him, yeah, the lady didn't even blink when I said Paul Blart, Zookeeper. She gave me the ticket. That's a shout out to the boys at the Frotcast, filmjoke.com/Frotcast. That's fine. All right. Ben texted me back, I hope you're really not seeing that. Or no, tell me you're not really seeing that. And I sent a text back, I'm not going to say I'm not seeing it.
Right.
And Ben returned with, may God have mercy on your soul. But after about, I don't know, an hour, 78 minutes, not that bad. It started to fall apart maybe at the 28-minute mark, fairly entertaining for the first half hour. You're run-of-the-mill slapstick comedy for the rest of the way, but family-friendly. It's a family-friendly film. It's not like your, Strange Wilderness. I don't know if you ever saw that, but...
I did. It was god-awful.
Built up as a possible companion piece to Grandma's Boy. did not live up to that high level of standard. So if you're looking for a pretty funny film to take your kids with a talking gorilla, which by and large was the shining part of this film, check out Paul Blart, Zookeeper. And try to see what the ticket person will say when you say Paul Blart, Zookeeper.
Yeah, did the gorilla ever cradle Kevin James in its arms and while singing a song like in that Old Dogs?
Yes, that was Old Dogs. I don't think that was Seth Green's character in Old Dogs. Mm-hmm. I actually saw that movie in theaters as well.
Oh, wow.
No, they were about the same size.
Okay, all right. Good stuff. Cool.
Donnie Wahlberg also starring in the movie.
Yeah, I feel like we should give a shout-out to Vince Mancini and those guys over at the Frotcast for at least making those movies watchable, if only to watch them and then listen to those guys make fun of them.
Yeah.
So Vince has been a friend of the show and guested on our podcast a couple times.
Friend of the show.
Yes.
Wish we share a little bit of success with us, but that's okay.
It's all right. cool. Anything else you've been consuming?
No, that's it.
Right on. All right. I've got two things I want to talk about, one of which I absolutely despise. So I'm going to talk about that first. And you warned me. You warned me before we started recording that we might lose listeners over this. And if
you don't care, Ben. You don't care.
If that's the case, listen, we're not making any money off of this. This is just you and I doing this.
That is a fact. That is a fact.
So, I mean... As harsh as it is to say, if somebody is going to stop listening because I don't like this movie, then okay, that's fine. I can live with that. But anyway, the movie in question is called The Goonies, and it's a movie that I believe Elizabeth Rapp, frequent guest on this podcast, has...
We are name-dropping the hell out of this episode.
Yeah, we are.
Happy 50th. We're going to mention every guest we've ever had.
Yeah, there you go. We should do that, actually. So she has made some comment about, oh, wow, you definitely need to see this. It seems like everybody in our generation has this love, this nostalgic love for The Goonies. Tyler, you, what is your relationship to the Goonies?
Never seen it.
Okay.
Don't plan on it.
Okay, all right. Well, then you're excluded.
Got a short round in it. I'd rather watch Temple of Doom. Probably the best in the Indiana Jones trilogy. I'm just saying.
I don't know that actor's name, so for lack of a better term, I'm just going to refer to him as Short Round, and he was awful in this movie. Every single person, I mean, the movie has this kind of nostalgic factor for people who are our age and kind of grew up watching it and stuff, but this was the first time that I'd ever seen it, and I went in with the kind of childhood mindset. You know, I'm aware that it's probably not going to be the best movie, but I'm wanting it to be something like one of the old Spielberg movies or something, you know, that has like a little bit of fun to it, and it's like a good story and whatever. And this movie is – what's that?
We are losing listeners as you speak.
I'm sorry. I don't know.
Just the buildup alone.
I don't know what I can tell you. It was directed by Richard Donner, who, I mean, if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you know I've been praising Donner's Superman movies over the past few weeks, whatever, months. And this movie was just god-awful, Tyler. I can't tell you how bad man. It was just like the story itself is idiotic. Like the guys who form the Goonies is this group of friends who are living in this neighborhood that are apparently all of their families' homes are about to be foreclosed on because a country club is coming through. And it's like, what kind of world do these guys live in where every family in this same neighborhood is just getting completely booted out of their houses? Like, you can't just do that to people.
Pique my interest?
I don't know.
I have a relationship with these characters now. Continue.
Yeah. Oh man, don't even pretend, because you really don't. Like, they try to play on the sad sack, like, oh, our parents are going to lose their houses, so that's the only reason you should care about what we're doing. And it's so bad. Nothing is
truffle
funny.
Shuffle, not even redeeming quality.
The truffle shuffle is retarded. I'm sorry. nothing is funny. There's this guy, I think his name is Chunk, who's
deformed, mentally handicapped individual. Am I right?
Or Sloth, maybe? I don't know. I don't remember. It's been like a little while ago.
I think his name is Chunk, but he is a Sloth.
Or vice
versa. His name is Sloth, and he's a Chunk.
All right, I'm getting this confused. I don't want to really piss off the Goonies fans. Chunk is the little fat kid in the group, and Sloth is the deformed brother of these madcap kind of robbers in the area, I guess, who are looking for this.
Which one does the truffle shuffle?
That would be Chunk.
Okay.
And
a mental image now.
And it's just... Man, this movie, like, Sean Astin is in it, Josh Brolin is in it, Corey Feldman is in it, and, like, freaking Joe Pantoliano is in it, and who else?
Jennifer Gardner?
That's essentially it.
No.
But anyway, it's god-awful. Don't ever see it. And I'm really legitimately angry at my friends and people over the years who have told me this movie is fantastic and worth seeing and all this stuff, because I did not have fun during a single minute of it. And I really wanted to like it, which is saying something, because, you know, when you go into a movie with the mindset of, like, I am looking for an excuse to like this and I can't, then it's that bad. So I hate
Ben.
It.
Really enjoy it when you get really angry.
I've gotta have that.
Donnergate begins now.
Donnergate. okay. Well, yeah. Don't ever see that movie ever. So it made me want to watch Hook, because the movie ends on a big a pirate ship, and like it looked like a reject from the Hook set, even though I think this movie predates Hook by like 7 years or something. But yeah, just go watch Hook again, and that will satisfy your craving for awesome movies featuring, pirates and kind of cool stories and stuff. So anyway,
Hook is like the epitome of my childhood movie, I think.
It really is.
It's one of the most quotable, I'll say.
Yeah, fantastic.
I think Ninja Turtles is probably the epitome of my childhood movies.
Nice. Yeah. So the other one I saw, going from one extreme to the other, is Gone with the Wind. And I've never seen this movie before.
72 years behind the curve.
Have you ever seen it?
I have seen bits and pieces as a child. We had it on double disc or double VHS. We had like the collectible collector's edition.
Yep.
With trivia about the movie.
And okay.
Stuff like that. You know, the first African-American won an Academy Award for Gone with the Wind.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah, a supporting actress from Mammy.
Yes, good old Mammy. All right, right on.
Oh, it's so racist just saying the word.
It's the character's name.
Mammy!
It's the character's name. What are we going to do? Okay, so Gone with the Wind, you know, obviously the movie is like 3 hours and 45 minutes, and I was on a plane from Florida back here to Los Angeles, and I was like, it was one of the free movies available on the plane. So I'm like, okay, this is the only time that I'm ever going to force myself to sit down and watch this because it's so long and I won't have the distractions of the internet or anything else around me. I can't really leave or turn it off or whatever. So I started watching it, and I still didn't even finish it on the flight. I think I had like 40 minutes left or something like that. So I just finished it just now, and the movie is better than I thought it was going to be. I'll give it credit.
It is a classic, then.
It is a classic, but just because the movie is a classic doesn't necessarily mean that it's really a great...
The Oscars that year beat Wizard of Oz.
It did beat The Wizard of Oz, and I was going to mention that. It was directed by a guy named Victor Fleming, who also directed The Wizard of Oz in that same year of 1939, which is, like, really crazy to think about. This one guy in the same year directing two of, like, arguably the greatest movies ever made. So I just want to give
what's up, Fleming?
Yeah, 72-year late shout-out to
Victor. High five. Up top, guy.
But Gone with the Wind, man, it's a really impressive movie. I didn't love it or anything like that, but anybody who sees it has to respect the amount of effort that went into crafting this thing. This is like the freaking golden age of Hollywood in one movie, all wrapped up. Clark Gable is a badass in it. I will give him that. I did not really think the character of Rhett Butler was going to be somebody that I enjoyed going into this movie, but coming away from it, I was like, man, that guy was pretty clutch. Scarlett O'Hara is kind of a whiny little bitch for most of the movie, and then she has her kind of moments where you think she's going to be kind of redeemed and actually like grow up a little bit, but honestly, I don't know, I guess spoilers for Gone with the Wind, but she never really does. I would be interested to have like somebody who's a big fan of this movie come on the podcast and talk about it or something at some point.
Yeah, we should review it one day.
Or maybe like get a female perspective of it or something. I think that might
kind of... No, forget that. Ugh, come on.
But
Gone with the Wind.
The movie, like you were talking about the whole portrayal of African Americans in it. I mean, it's obviously there's like slavery and all kinds of stuff like running rampant through the movie. There's also like this weird bent where the movie itself seems to side with the South during the Civil War, when even though they're the clear losers, like the way that it has these kind of narration cards that come up every now and again. And, you know, it talks about like the, let me see, I wrote it down here. Let's see if I can find my notes. Something about the gallant remnants of an army marched on to face their foe. Like, it always just talks about the South and like this kind of positive spin, even though they're the clear like detractors, I guess, or like
Yeah, some would call them the antagonists, but right. You're reading, or it was based on a book, and you're watching a movie that was based on the book that was probably
exactly
portraying the South side.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So
not the Moby song.
But yeah, the movie does kind of side with the South. That's actually something that I wrote down. Like, movie or the book, which one's responsible for that?
I'm sure they appreciate the support. 70 years after the fact,
the South appreciates the support.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Gone with the Wind. It's about time someone agrees with us.
But I will, yeah, I mean, rides. The movie is like super epic, and even though it is like this kind of romance at the heart of it, it does kind of pull back occasionally and give these really gorgeous, like, huge shots. There's one in particular where there's, like, a siege of Atlanta, and it kind of burns to the ground, and Scarlett O'Hara is walking through these wounded soldiers, and it the camera, like, starts close in on her. She's, like, walking past a couple of dudes, and then it slowly zooms out to reveal just a huge field of hundreds and probably thousands of guys just laying down. And this is way before computer-generated graphics, so they actually had to do this, like, manually, you know, like, have people lay down. You couldn't paint those in, like, mats and stuff. There was actually people, like, rolling around on the ground, so you couldn't really digitize anything like that. So it's just really impressive, you know, in the same way that I watched Ten Commandments fairly recently, you know, a few months back, and was really impressed with the way that Cecil B. DeMille was able to kind of pull in these real people and do everything practically and all this kind of stuff. You know, they always say for that movie, it's the cast of thousands. It's same type of deal with Gone with the Wind. It's really impressive watching it now, at how much people rely on computer stuff and how these guys didn't have access to that, but were still able to pull off a huge scope in a movie. So if nothing else, I would recommend maybe just watching it for that. And it is kind of like this, you know, Southern hospitality type of, like, charming little thing here and there. Unless you're looking you know, pay your respects to film history, then I would say it's okay to skip this one. You know, it's not
what?
What, you would disagree?
Well, you gotta watch Gone with the Wind if you're talking about respecting films.
No, that's what I'm saying. Unless you want to pay your respects to film history, then if you don't want to do that, then you can go ahead and skip out on it. That's what I'm saying. Because, I mean, even you just said that you've only seen...
I'm going to play word games.
Even you just said...
I watched it as a child. I was young. I was hyper. I think my aunt used to put it in when it was time for bed, and I'd fall asleep in, like, the first scene. It was that kind of boring, but, you know, I've pieced it together. I've read some books about it, and by that, I mean I'm lying.
Yeah.
I haven't read a book about it, but...
Right.
Books mention it. Let's say that.
Yes, books do mention this movie.
Books I've read have mentioned Gone with the Wind.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I don't really want to get too far into it, but I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it on VHS again when I go back to my parents' house. I'll just pop it in, and we'll see what happens from there.
Nice. Yeah,
pretty good quality, I think, back then.
I do want to say that I'm looking at the Wikipedia page of it right now, and it says that the gross of this movie, as far as theatrically, when adjusted to 2010 prices, is approximately $2.9 billion. Which makes it the highest grossing film of all time, adjusted for inflation.
Does that mean when it came out, it made that much?
Yeah, when in its theatrical run, it made $2.9 billion.
$2.9 billion?
Yeah, because Avatar, I looked it up, Avatar just made $2.7 billion in its theatrical run. But this movie, adjusted for inflation, would have made more than that.
It was Gone with the Wind in, like, triple 3D.
It was in Technicolor.
Did James Cameron direct this film?
Oh, man.
He should redirect Gone with the Wind, see what happens.
Oh, man, people would be so pissed about that.
He just takes, like, the Gone with the Wind original film and, like, adds a bunch of CG stuff to it and, like, claims directorial traits from it.
That would be pretty interesting.
See what happens. Yeah, that would be pretty interesting. That's a good what-if scenario.
Yeah. All right.
Like, well,
yeah.
When they interview him and they're like, he always says, like, if we made Titanic today, that sunset would be CG.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, all this stuff with his Terminator films. And it's just like, dude, get off the CG horse, man.
Yeah. Well,
it's supposed to be like a labor of love, not an easy shortcut.
Yeah, but to be fair, he was one of the guys who kind of crafted and perfected the quote-unquote CG horse with Terminator 2. So I feel like he has more of a kind of an affiliation with that whole style of filmmaking than other people. So he has, like, more of an excuse to latch onto that, I think. But
I don't think so.
Okay. All right. agree to disagree.
I give a lot of respect to the actual, like, designers that draw and use the computers.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to the director of a film.
Right. I mean, yeah, it's his vision, but those are the guys who are actually, and girls, who are actually just executing that vision and making it come to life. So, yeah, sure.
Like I say, oh, I want to see a movie where I fly the entire time. You know, I'm not actually doing much work. I'm just kind of saying, make me fly.
Yeah.
Someone else makes me fly.
Yeah, I mean, the director has... Okay, yeah, this is not the time nor place.
Oh, okay, after midnight. We'll save it for after midnight.
All right, well, in the meantime, let's go ahead TBD. And move on into our review of Poltergeist.
The house looks just like the one next to it. And the one next to that. And the one next to that. A young couple live in it.
Give Ken a kiss.
You are so obnoxious.
With their three children.
Portia, chew each bite 10 times.
And something more. Now Steven Spielberg crosses a frightening new threshold into a world within our own. Its form is revealed.
What is it?
Its focus is clear. And the games are over. Poltergeist. It knows what scares you.
All right.
This movie was the shit!
Yes, it was. I really enjoyed it. I'm glad you did too. So Poltergeist, a 1982 movie directed by Tobe Hooper and produced by Steven Spielberg.
Yes. Ghost directed, basically, from what I've read.
Right, yeah, I was reading into that too. We'll talk about that. This is a movie that has been parodied countless times, and actually predates Ghostbusters by a couple years.
Sure does.
But
years.
Uses a lot of the same type of effects and stuff. Which, I mean, this was my first time seeing Poltergeist. What about you? What's your relationship to this movie before?
I've never seen it either, surprisingly. I've always wanted to see it, and I knew it was from the 80s, and I love 80s movies. I think there should be an entire podcast dedicated to 80s movies. Mm-hmm. And if I were to start that podcast, I would start with Poltergeist.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It would probably help if it was an 80s horror movie podcast, because I think I'd have more fun with that, but...
Yeah.
That's nitpicking.
Maybe.
Like you see a lot of stop motion models, and then like the transparencies, and yeah, you do see the same kind of technique that they used in Ghostbusters, which is pretty interesting, considering, you know, people probably associate that with Ghostbusters.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Poltergeist, and it was, you know, it was a few scenes. It wasn't the entire film, because a lot of the film is suspense driven. But when needed, there were, like you're talking about, like. Not animations, but more, I guess, special effects, let's say, that added to the kind of the horrific value of this movie. But there was also some real stuff that added to the horrifying aspect of this movie.
Like the little clown doll?
Oh, yeah. I added a voice. I was talking as that voice while he was on screen. Like, I'm going to kill you. So it was fairly entertaining. But when I say horrifying, I don't mean like Saw or anything. Like this is a extremely enjoyable, scary movie. Like one that you'll be spooked and you might have some nightmares. I haven't slept in 72 hours, but, you're not going to be like grossed out or completely, quote unquote horrified because it's not really like, oh my god, that person is being sawed in half.
Yeah, it's not going to disturb you on a deep level, I don't think. Yeah.
It's very classical when it comes to its ghosts and such.
Yeah, definitely. You know, you mentioned it being an 80s movie and having that, you didn't say it, but it does have kind of a little bit of that feel of like that aw shucks type of stuff, you know, like everything about it seems kind of innocent. You know, the movie starts with like the national anthem playing on TV you know, before the 24-hour news networks and 24-hour television, that's what used to happen to televisions. You know, it would just go to – they would play the national anthem and it would just go to snow. Like nobody these days really remembers that kind of stuff. I don't know what year that actually happened. That might have actually been before you and I were born. But
no, there's channels would shut off.
Yeah, I think
it wouldn't be fuzz. It wouldn't be snow. It would be those multicolored bars.
Yeah, yeah.
From what I can recall,
it kind of rolled out a little bit and kind of was a gradual transition once cable came into play.
Cable.
But yeah, and you know, there's that. There's the fact that the kids are like the what is the is it Robbie? Is that the boy's name? Right.
Yeah. Let's say that. Okay. Yeah. Sure.
Well, yeah, it's Robbie. So he's like reading a Captain America comic. There's like Star Wars stuff everywhere in his room.
Yeah.
You know, which is like pretty funny to consider that probably kids these
days. It was a smack in the face, yeah.
Would have the same type of stuff even in their room now, which like, I guess, speaks to the quality of Star Wars years and years later. But there's that. And then there's like the whole little tiny scene where Craig T. Nelson is like arguing with his neighbor about changing the channel because like the remotes are programmed to the same frequency or something, right? Where like he changes his channel and his neighbor, like the guys are trying to watch the game and like the kids want to watch something else in the other house, and there's like they're like kind of battling back and forth with that. Just stuff that like today, as audiences today watching this movie, are like, I can't like, no, that doesn't happen anymore because times have changed. But it's kind of cool to see stuff like that, you know, that actually was a part of people's lives legitimately back
then.
That's not just like a plot device or something. Those are the kind of little touches that probably would have made this movie feel a little bit more realistic or more, you know, endearing, I guess.
Relatable.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah, people throw the word nostalgia around a lot when it, especially nowadays when we're talking about movies throwing back to these famous films from the 80s. Mm-hmm. and you see that like in the 70s, let's say, where Grease came out and Happy Days, where it was a nostalgic factor from the 50s.
Yep.
But like that, like it's not really nostalgia to me because I remember kind of things being like that.
Yeah.
Maybe it was because I lived in like a Midwestern town that, you know, the 80s or the 90s was still the 80s while the rest of the world was in the 90s.
That's actually an interesting way of looking at it. I think that might be, I mean, I didn't live in that town with you, but that sounds like it could be true. Right.
But yeah, and you know, it's I don't consider it nostalgic because it's kind of just a harkening back to what things were like. I don't know. Maybe I'm getting the word nostalgia wrong. Nostalgia, in my opinion, I guess, is when you like look back to a decade and kind of place yourself in it because you were never there. Like that. Like I'd be nostalgic about the 70s.
Oh, I see.
I lived in the 70s, but I might have the definition wrong. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I feel like that word is getting used a ton, like you said, and, you know, especially for movies like Super 8 and stuff. That was like the big word for surrounding Super 8 was nostalgia for the old Spielberg movies and stuff. And yeah, I think it's being bastardized a little bit from its original definition. But
And people love those movies, and that's why I like Poltergeist, and that's why I like, you know, Ghostbusters and stuff like that, is because, you know, it's kind of like a part of your history. You can see it on film, like you remember how things were, and then this movie kind of shows you how things were, and you're like, oh, I remember that, or I had one of those, or I had that t-shirt, or I looked like that when I was so it's kind of cool to watch movies like this, and that's why I'm stuck in the 80s half the time.
Yeah, totally. So what did you think about, I mean, about the way that the whole thing go? Let's get into it. Go for it. What did you think?
I knew it was going to be semi scary, suspenseful. I didn't know how well it would do it. You know, I knew Poltergeist was popular, but I didn't think I would enjoy it as much. Talk about specifics. The girl, Carol Ann, was a great actress. I thought she did a very good job of playing like this I don't want to say autistic, but very transcendental character that was knew what was going on. If she was addressed, she would respond. So that's obviously not autism, but she was also kind of ethereal. Like she saw things that no one else could see.
Yeah.
And you can tell that from like this little girl's portrayal of the character.
Yeah.
was kind of interesting. And like the whole discovery of the supernatural happenings within the house, how they gradually become more intense, and the family kind of having fun discovering these little quirky things, like you know, today or in a movie today, the stuff starts happening. You know, obviously the movie, you're going to have people continue on, you know, or not running away or calling the cops or whatever, you know, immediately calling the cops. But in this movie, they're kind of having fun with the chairs moving and stuff kind of floating around. And then it gets progressively more intense, and then like scientists show up and seeing like hallucinations. It gets really weird, and then it gets heartwarming, and then it gets really weird again. It's kind of a roller coaster ride.
Yeah, it is. The pacing is really interesting, like the way that they're able to kind of crank things up, like tension wise, and like have things be really, really intense for a little while, and then like kick it back a notch and kind of let you like get your breath again, and then throw you back into like some really insane stuff. And then by the end, man, this thing just like cranks it to another level. Like, it is just all hell breaks loose by the end of this movie. So I really enjoyed like the way that it kind of set everything up, and also where it ended, like the way that it kind of put together the climax of the movie, which is I think my favorite part and probably the most memorable part, I think.
Ending.
Yeah, the whole massive. I mean, you know, we've mentioned before that if you're listening to this podcast, you can expect spoilers from when we start talking about it. But the whole thing, like the final scene when they're outside and what is her name? Diane, I think, the wife, the mom. Yeah. Is outside and like falls into the pit and everything, and there's bodies floating around, and it just like everything, there's rain and storms and like people are screaming, and it's just like, it's intense. It reminded me a lot of Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell, the more recent movie. I mean, I think that came out in like 2009 or something like that, but just the intense nature of the movie is what kind of reminded me a little bit of that. But what did you think about the ending?
The ending was pretty awesome, I'd say. I knew the exact end of this movie, so when the first supposed ending happened, I was like, this can't be it. Like,
what are you talking about? Which part?
Well, the supposed ending is old lady cleans, quote unquote, cleans the house.
Oh yes. Yeah.
They start packing up like they're gonna move, and I was like, this isn't the end yet, because something else is supposed to happen.
Mm.
And then all this stuff starts breaking loose, like the spirits are like, oh, you thought we were gone?
Yeah.
Interesting trivia. Can I talk about the trivia?
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about too much of the curse of Poltergeist, because I think there's an email and talking about that. So I'm not going to go into that right now. But something that I don't think is in the email is the bodies from the swimming pool were actually real skeletons, like real people. Or they used to be real people.
Right.
And because it was cheaper to have real skeletons than fake plastic skeletons, which is interesting because, A, that's a good filmmaking, staying true to the material. So I respect them for that. But it's slightly disrespecting of the dead.
I don't know about slight. I think that's a full-on disrespect.
Full-on disrespect? Okay, let's say full-on disrespect of the dead, since you're making a movie about disrespecting the dead.
Right, yeah, that's what I mean.
What's the lesson we've learned from this, Steve? I got nothing. It's don't disrespect the dead by not having dead people in your movie.
Yeah, that's really crazy to me. And you know, you mentioned this curse, and we'll talk about that later, but it blows my mind that they are making a movie about that, and then it came down to somebody's decision of, hey, should we get real bodies to do this? And they are presumably aware of what movie they're making and have maybe, oh, I don't know, read the script and are like, yeah, let's go for that. Let's do it.
What are they going to do? Seriously, guys. What are these dead bodies going to do? Are they going to come alive and like attack us while we're in a not built yet swimming pool?
Yeah.
No way.
So
let's smoke some more hemp.
Yeah.
The other scary part that I thought was kind of out of the blue, and it really stuck with me, was Diane's the lady who played Diane. I think her name was like Mary Beth something. You know, correct me if I'm wrong.
Jo Beth Williams. Yeah.
Jo Beth. Yeah, a little Jo Beth. She seemed a little overexcited in her role. especially when she was talking to Carol Ann. But then again, she was a crazed mother that wanted her child back, so I can go with that. But there was one scene, I don't know if you remember, she came out of the bathroom and she was like, Carol Ann, I haven't talked to you since yesterday. And then she starts knocking on the bedroom door.
Yep.
Like, Carol Ann, can I come in? And like, she opens the door and there's just this blood curdling scream. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh God.
Yeah.
Like, that was just one of the, like, this movie's full, like, I can't say it enough to check out this movie, but there's like so many little things that you'll just be like, oh, that was good.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I know exactly what you're talking about. And I jumped during that scene because yeah. It's so loud. Like the sound design when she opens that door and she screams and slams the door shut. And the way that they shot it was really cool too, because you see the whole hallway in one locked off shot. And she like comes out of the room and like stops right in front of it and like slowly looks back at the door. And it's like that whole thing that Hitchcock said about like building suspense. You know, you show the door at the end of the hallway, but you don't really, you know, it's all about building suspense is when you show the door, not necessarily like what's behind it. It's all about like the way that you show it. And that was kind of a perfect example of that, you know, like showing that door in the hallway and you know what's behind it already because they've already shown it in the movie and you're just like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And then, yeah, it's just like this horrifying scream. So
I wonder if they played the scream like while she was doing that or if she had to just act like it was a scream.
Yeah, that's interesting.
We haven't talked about Craig T. Nelson yet.
Yep. I thought he did
the incomparable, as I describe him, Craig T. Nelson.
The incomparable, yes.
Remember him as Hayden Fox from the series Coach.
Yes.
1989 to 1997.
Okay. Yeah.
That's actually a fact. That's true. I read it recently.
I never watched Coach, but
really?
No, I do know who Craig T. Nelson is, but I just never really watched Coach. But
very famous for it was a vehicle for Jerry Van Dyke, Dick Van Dyke's brother, and Shelley Fabro. You may remember from Elvis movies.
No, I don't. No,
I believe she was in two or three of those.
Okay, all right. What did you think about him? I thought, I think he's the kind of epitome of a guy, you know, like the husband. You know, he did a good job kind of being the everyman, I think.
Yeah. He played Craig T. Nelson in this movie, and I enjoy the hell out of a Craig T. Nelson flick.
Yeah.
he was kind of goofy, but he was also serious, but at other times he was like, you know, kind of standoffish or indifferent to the whole situation where he would like listen to these specialists talk and he's like, yeah, right. When already he's seen all this stuff happen.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just kind of he's not even like really a comedic actor, but you can tell he's funny in real life.
Yeah.
Like I've never met him. I'm welcome to being introduced to him because I think he's awesome, but
right.
Yeah, and he's in Poltergeist 2 as well, so I don't know. I'm probably going to check it out for the sole reason that Craig T. Nelson's in it.
Okay, all right.
He makes the movie a little more watchable, enjoyable.
Yeah, sure. We were talking about the sound design a little bit with how loud it was when she opens that door in the hallway. There's another scene that I noticed that I wrote down in my notes about how cool the sound design was, and it was a scene where it's at night and they're in the house and everybody's just whispering for like 5 minutes, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, when they're trying to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that was actually pretty cool. Like, it's very rare that you see movies or scenes like that in movies, you know, where everybody's whispering because, I don't know why, but it just is. It just kind of struck me as something.
Microphones. Yeah. You don't need to whisper.
I guess so, yeah. It kind of struck me as, like, a cool scene of something that I'd not really seen before. And it's kind of like the antithesis to The Social Network. Like, I don't know if you remember, but there's that scene where Justin Timberlake takes Jesse Eisenberg into a club, and they're up top on the top floor sitting on a balcony, and he's talking about the founder of Victoria's Secret and stuff, and the sound design in that club is just huge. Like there's thumping bass and all kinds of like dance music and stuff, and you have to strain to hear them talking underneath this music. And this was like the other way around, where it was like their whispers were, you had to strain to hear it underneath like the deafening quiet almost. It was just kind of a cool reversal of that, which is just something that I noticed because I watched Social Network recently. So that's the only reason that I'm really comparing it to that. But I don't know. I just thought that was
a good comparison. That's good.
I just thought it was kind of cool. So let me look here and see.
I've got something else to bring up. Let's bring up some more speculation here.
Okay. Do it.
The redheaded doctor from the school, not the old lady, not Zelda, whatever, yep. whoever played that character, but the redheaded professor of psychology / paranormal
mm-hmm.
Activity. I'm pretty sure she's had some experience with some ghosts, maybe had a loved one lost to the afterlife mm-hmm. void. You can kind of tell from the performance, and if they don't come out and say it, that, oh, she's had a history. She lost her husband, or she lost her son, or something along those lines. But you can kind of tell from the relationship that you see form from her and Diane,
mm-hmm.
even to the parts where she, like, the camera will cut to her during a scene when she's about to go into the paranormal
yeah.
door. Or, yep. you know, something like that where she's like, you can almost, like, the actor's eyes kind of, so cliche. The actor's eyes tell a story
yeah.
of where she's, like, hearkening back to when she tried this and tried to reclaim her son, her husband, her mom, whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's kind of interesting. I don't know if this is pursued in Poltergeist 2 or 3.
Right.
But I thought that I'm pretty sure that's a definite possibility.
Yeah, no, I know exactly what you're talking about because I thought it was kind of an interesting thing to do where they didn't really tell you exactly what that backstory was and what she's yeah. really referring to, but they did go out of their way a bunch of different times to cut to reaction shots of her in situations where they wouldn't normally do that.
Right.
So,
and like a moviegoer today would be like, why are they cutting to her? What is she doing, man?
Yeah.
Who is she? But back then, you know, it's like you got to think about these movies and see, like, there's a bigger picture. There's a bigger story that, you know, it's not just this secular event. You know, there's other people that have had. And I think that's why she went from psychology to paranormal activity. She's, like, on this journey to either discover the answers or to find whoever she lost or whatever.
Yep. Yeah, you know? Totally. I think that's absolutely in the text of the film. If
that
you
is in the basket. That is some bizarre stuff.
Johnny Carson coming out.
I'm working on Johnny Carson. That's the only two phrases I can say as Johnny Carson. Piss poorly, I might add. I've not moved on to any other dialogue. That is bizarre. That is some weird, wild stuff. Say it. There's some weird, wild stuff.
I like where you're going with it, though. I like what you've done so far. One thing that I wanted to mention was, you know, we talked about the Ghostbusters connection a little bit. One other thing that I had written down in relation to that was that...
prequel to Ghostbusters.
Kind of, yeah. Was that one of the characters says, I think it's the kind of clairvoyant that gets called in at the very end that says that she clears the house. But at one point, she's telling the parents... And she says, clear your minds. It knows what scares you. And I'm like, is the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man going to come out of this thing? Like, this is so reminiscent of Ghostbuster. Or I guess it is preminiscent. I don't know.
It is de-reminiscent. De-establishment.
Oh, like
Ghostbusters. It's...
premonition.
I'm gonna say it's metamissant.
Nice. Yeah, whatever, you know what I mean. But
yeah, I do. And like, cool. Even the point where she tries to get into the door and there's like this Zool like monster.
Yep,
you're just like, yep, that's it.
Yeah,
that is when Ghostbusters through and through, they took this technology.
Yeah,
stole.
Face to face with Craig T. Nelson too, like when the huge creature when the face comes out right at him and he's like, yeah.
Do you have any Grey Poupon?
There's one other thing that I wrote down that I thought was kind of cool when Diane is rolling through the room like Inception style.
A little meta missing Inception.
I'm sure they probably shot that on like a rotating room and just nailed all the furniture to the walls because that seems to be the only way that you could actually do that practically.
Only room to have.
Yeah.
The only way.
But I thought that was really cool, the way that they pulled that off back in 82 when this movie came out. And then I'm trying to think of any other things.
Jersey came up, you know what I'm talking about? A little football jersey.
Oh, there's one thing that you were telling me a little bit about, a story with Steven Spielberg about this movie.
Yes. Oh, well, let me recap that. I was going to keep it to myself, but I'm going to share it.
Yeah, go for it.
Generous. I'm feeling a generous move, episode 50. Steven Spielberg actually was directing E.T. the Extraterrestrial at the same time as Poltergeist, So legally, contractually speaking, we're talking about 1982 here, Steven Spielberg could not direct Poltergeist because he was obligated to direct E.T., which I think is a completely different story lore on its own, and damn this guy for being part of two, like, epic Hollywood lore movies. So Tobe is his name? Tobe yes. Holler?
Tobe Hooper.
Tobe Hooper.
I believe. And like, it might be Toby, but I'm going to say Tobe.
Yeah, you got to put a Y on that, son. Come on.
Yeah.
Tobe Hooper was kind of almost like a ghost director because Spielberg was on the set of Poltergeist almost every day. I think every day. And so was Tobe Hooper. Not to give Mr. Hooper any guff.
Right.
But according to the Wikipedia page, of course, another, you know, unreliable academic source.
Right.
But they were saying, like, Spielberg went through all the storyboards. You know, he approved almost everything that went through, you know, and Hooper was kind of like, if he had a problem, he would go to Spielberg, basically. Yeah. So it was kind of an emasculating, and some, well, from the impression that I got from the paragraph that I read, I'm very knowledgeable, but the paragraph that I read, it kind of emasculated Hooper in that he could not direct this film. If he had, it would have been terrible. Spielberg was like the, basically the director behind the scenes. An interesting story concerning Spielberg is when they used the real skeletons in the pool scene.
Yep.
You know the scene I'm referring to?
Oh, yeah. We talked about it.
Diane in all her pantsless glory falls into the almost dug-out pool, which has the rainwater collecting. And that's where the dead man's party is going on. And she, while filming this pool of water, she wasn't scared of the fact that she was swimming with dead skeletons of real people. She was more afraid of the fact that these lights, these camera lights, that of course you don't see on camera,
right,
would fall into the pool and electrocute her to death, which, you know, is a, you know, pretty justified complaint.
Sure.
So Spielberg was like, okay, how about this? I'll get in the pool with you while we're filming this scene, so if lights do fall into the pool, we'll both die. And she was like, okay, that works for me.
Nice.
So that's kind of a little story about Spielberg and how, and like that story alone, like he's in the scene with her,
yeah,
or in the pool with, like he was on set all the time and he was doing E.T. and they're both great movies. This guy is amazing. He's amazing.
Yeah. And it seems like
ever.
It seems like Tobe Hooper would have been the one to be in the water with her if he had any sort of, you know, if he had the kind of directorial control that he maybe should have.
Like Tobe Hooper was like, he's having this conversation with Joe Beth, and he's like, let me go ask Steven. I'll be right back. And Steven comes and solves the problem, which, again, I don't know what Tobe Hooper has come out with, but I'm sure he's a very adequate director.
I want to say he did the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie.
That is a scary movie, I've heard.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, what are you going to do? Let's get into Tobe Hooper's shoes for a second and say, would you stand up to Steven Spielberg? Would you go over Steven Spielberg's head? No.
It didn't seem like that to me. It seemed more like he was kind of, he didn't really make any, like, decisions when people came to him with things. Yeah. He was like, I don't know. And then Spielberg was like, all right, maybe we just do this. And then he's like, yeah, that sounds good. So it's not
think,
like he's really deferring to Spielberg. It's just like, it seemed like he didn't really have the knowledge or the capability or something at the time to be able to just physically make decisions. But
I don't want
to
say that, but I do, speculating, of course.
Yeah.
Perhaps it was like a professional nod of Tobe Hooper where he looks at the movie, he looks at the script, he looks at the storyboards, he looks at Spielberg's interest, he tries to imagine Spielberg's vision, and he says, you know what, the movie's going to be better, or, you know, if Spielberg's more involved, so I'm just going to be like, you know what, I'm contractually speaking, I am the director of this film, but the film is going to be better if Spielberg has more of a hand in it, so I'm going to let him do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
You know, we have that scenario as well.
That's I never really considered that, but I guess I feel like you would have to, I don't know,
you
I
have
just
to be
feel
a
like
pretty big person to do that.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like Hollywood
is that man.
Hollywood does not breed people like that very often. But I think
Spielberg, perhaps he had a long talk with him.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe. That's definitely possible. So one thing that I wanted to mention, actually I'll talk about it during the email section. So is there anything else that you wanted to talk about as far as the movie goes?
I am I can get my final thoughts.
Okay, go for it.
Excellent film. Check it out. It's on streaming right now. I will not talk to you if you refuse to see this movie. Period. After that, after Poltergeist, I'm definitely going to watch Poltergeist 2 and 3 because I think they made it into a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
The girl that plays Carol Ann is in 2 and 3.
Yep.
Craig T. Nelson is in 2.
Yep.
So if you need more reason to watch 2 and 3, I don't have any.
Yeah.
That's enough for me.
Good stuff. Yeah, I also really like this movie a lot more than I thought I was going to. One thing we didn't talk about was the score by Jerry Goldsmith, which I thought was creepy, if maybe a little over the top. But
the main theme with like the children singing,
mm-hmm.
Very scary.
Yeah, good stuff.
Children are scary in general.
Yeah,
I don't know if you listened to the rest of the credits to the very end. Did you do that?
I don't know if I did.
There's like the end of the theme, like the children start laughing.
Ooh.
Oh, it is. I don't think. Oh, it is. Either way, it is spooky.
Bone chilling, yeah.
You don't know if the children are ghosts.
Yeah.
I assume they are.
The something you just said, children are creepy. All of a sudden, for some reason, that triggered in my mind an image of The Ring, which I can't believe that we didn't talk about.
I don't want to talk about The Ring. I've never seen that.
The girl coming out of the snowy television and Carol Ann going.
I don't even want to imagine it, dude.
But okay, well, yeah, that just at least deserves a mention. So, what?
Japanese children who are ghosts coming out of TVs.
That's frightening to you, yeah.
That is super frightening. I've never, like, even the previews for The Ring freak me out.
Yeah, it's a good movie. That's freaky.
I think you would have to legitimately like drag me, restrain me in some capacity. And I am issuing that challenge to somebody.
I like that you'll watch not only Poltergeist but sequels because the child goes into it, but not The Ring because the child comes out of it.
No. It just doesn't have that nostalgic feel of Craig T. Nelson safe by my side. Craig T. Nelson's not in The Ring. I can't help it.
No, he's not.
It's my rock. My rock. Scary movies.
All right. Well, you want to go ahead and rev up the old Apple II and let people know what we're going to be watching next week? Dust that baby off?
Yeah, I haven't used it in a few weeks. Hope it still works. Let's power it up. All right. We are watching a not just new movie. It fits the criteria. Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, based off the popular video game and made into an unpopular film. Starring Strawberry Fields from Quantum of Solace, James Bond movie. I have no idea what her real name is.
I believe it's Gemma Arterton, but that's neither here nor there.
Strawberry Fields.
Yep. And I like how you give her top billing over Jake Gyllenhaal.
I give the top billing to the people that matter.
Yes, indeed.
Jake Gyllenhaal, not from Persia. Let's make that clear right now, week beforehand.
I feel like we're going to talk about that.
Don't want to make angry any of our listeners when they find out that Jake Gyllenhaal is playing a Persian.
Right.
I don't think Sir Ben Kingsley is Persian either. Maybe he's British because he has the Sir title.
Yes, I think you're right.
I'm seeing holes already. I haven't even seen the film yet.
Well, Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time is available on streaming right now, so feel free to watch that. Drop us a line. Let us know what you think about it. You can shoot us an email at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. We have actually, I should go ahead and say that you could subscribe to this podcast in iTunes for free. Leave us a review. That would be awesome. Check us out on Facebook. And we do have a Twitter account, twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. We have a couple of new followers at DDogFilm, at LucilleBNK, and at John Cross Jr. all following now, so thanks for that. Let's go ahead and read a couple of the emails we got. So this one is from Josh. Joshua. Here we go. It says, I just started listening to your podcast about 3 weeks ago and have listened to all the episodes. You guys make good points about some movies, and I disagree with others, but otherwise you do a good job. I have a few recommendations. Cannonball 1 and 2 in a double feature.
Done.
I like that idea. All Things Police Academy.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Steve Guttenberg, you're my boy.
I think there's like 7 or 8 of those movies, so that'll be
I'm pretty sure there are.
Episode. Yeah. Short Circuit 1 and 2.
In the bank.
And he says also, or how about the movie Hackers?
I'm gonna meet that. I'm gonna see your Hackers and raise you Flight of the Navigator.
I would say I would meet you Hackers and raise you, or see Hackers and raise you Sneakers. But
is that the one where the kid finds Michael Jordan's? No, that's Like Mike. Edit that out.
No, I'm not editing that.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm not ashamed of that.
I know. Okay, so back to the email. He says, just a few ideas. Keep up the good work. Would also love to hear your thoughts on the movies The Princess Bride and Ever After. So I know.
Your thoughts, Princess Bride?
I mean, I love Princess Bride.
Absolute classic.
Maybe we'll talk about that in one episode. I feel like that would be fun. Get somebody ridiculous on as a guest. Maybe Carrie Ells.
Yeah. Boom!
We'll try to get on that one. What about Ever After? Do you know? Have you seen that one?
Saw that, no.
Yeah, I didn't either. Well, thanks for the email, Joshua Sibian. Thanks for the email there. And we also have another one. Dear NJNM, your podcast may be potentially cursed. I've been into a lot of Hollywood ghost stories recently, and by recently, I mean 2 instances in the last week. And today, I found out about the poltergeist curse. As Wikipedia, though considered academically unsound, states, the poltergeist curse is a rumor of a supposed curse attached to the Poltergeist trilogy and its crew, derived from the fact that 4 cast members died in the 6 years between the releases of the 1st and 3rd films. The rumor is often fueled by the fact that real cadavers were used as props in various episodes, or I'm sorry, various scenes of Poltergeist and Poltergeist.
Did it again?
What's that?
They did it in Poltergeist 2?
Yeah, apparently so.
Hey, it was so cheap. Let's do it again.
The rumor and the surrounding deaths were explored in a 2002 episode of the E! True Hollywood Story entitled A Curse of the Poltergeist. So they list the 4 deaths here, and it says Dominique Dunn, who played the eldest daughter Dana in the first movie, died on November 4th, 1982 at age 22 after being strangled by her abusive boyfriend. Her boyfriend, John Thomas Sweeney, was convicted of voluntary manslaughter and sentenced to 6 years in prison, but was paroled after serving 3.5 years.
Where's his untimely death?
Yeah, I know, seriously. Julian Beck, 60-year-old actor who played Henry Kane in Poltergeist 2, The Other Side, died on September 14th, 1985 of stomach cancer, diagnosed before he'd accepted the role. Will Sampson, 53 years old, who played Taylor, the medicine man in Poltergeist 2. Oh, died as a result of a post-operative kidney failure and pre-operative malnutrition problems on June 3rd, 1987. And Heather O'Rourke, who played Carol Ann in all 3 Poltergeist movies, died on February 1st, 1988 at the age of 12 after what doctors initially described as an acute form of influenza, but later changed to septic shock after bacterial toxins invaded her bloodstream. At the time, she had suffered acute bowel obstruction, initially diagnosed as Crohn's disease, which may have been cause of death. And then the email continues, I ain't afraid of no ghost, Ray Stans, PhD. So thanks for the heads up on the poltergeist curse. A story I was going to tell you, Tyler, because I don't think I've even told you this. I took a tour of the Paramount Studios lot in Hollywood here, and apparently one of the stages, they shot the Poltergeist on a lot of the interiors on one of the stages there, and they consider that stage to be haunted by the ghost of Heather O'Rourke, who, as we just mentioned, died tragically at the age of 12. And the story has it that if you go into this stage and say, you know, at night, of course, when the lights are all off and everything, and you say, Heather, do you want to come out and play? Then, you know, you'll hear weird noises and, you know, footsteps and all that stuff, because that same stage was the stage where Happy Days was shot. And Heather O'Rourke did a lot of guest work on Happy Days when she was a kid, and she loved that show. That was like her favorite place to be. She loved the crew and the cast and everybody, and that was like her favorite place. So that's why the legend has it that she kind of haunts that stage on the Paramount lot. So
these days are ours, Ben.
Yes, these days are
ours. These happy days. that is some bizarre stuff. That is some weird, wild stuff.
Indeed. All right. Well, let's play.
Or that is a really sad story, I might add.
It is, yeah.
That... Any child that dies at the age of 12, any child that dies,
yeah,
it is just sad, but it's just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Do you get the Ray Stantz reference?
The Ghostbusters character, yes.
Okay, good. Thank
yes,
you.
Absolutely.
I don't think his last name was ever mentioned.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I had an app.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. We had a game.
As a kid, but yeah. Yeah, transitioning from Talks of Death, let's go ahead and play some games, why don't we? Let's finish up the character name game before we get going. So, Jake Weiler was the name. Any guesses on that one?
I'm gonna say Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
No, but you're pretty close on that one.
Scott Pilgrim versus the Universe.
No.
Am I close with the Scott Pilgrim?
No, you're close.
Is it a Chris Evans character in?
Yep.
Not Fantastic Four. Johnny Storm.
It's one of his earlier performances where he wasn't really Chris Evans. It's a spoof movie.
And is it gonna be Scary Movie 3?
Nope.
I got a spoof movie. Yep. I know what you did last Friday the
13th. Nope.
Scream if you know what starring Tom Arnold.
It involves a parody of She's All That.
Ooh, very interesting. Was it 10 Things I Hate About You?
It was not. That's not necessarily.
Is that even a parody movie?
I think it parodies 10 Things I Hate About You, maybe.
Oh, is it Date Movie?
It is not. It's pre-Date Movie.
Is it Epic Movie?
No, it's
Is it
pre-
Dance Movie?
No.
Step Up 4.
But it does have the word movie in the title.
It's not Scary Movie 2?
No.
Scary Movie 4.
No.
That's the one with Shaq in it, right?
It's not a scary
movie. He doesn't mirror Shaq?
No.
I'm pretty sure he plays basketball with Shaq and... is it Scary Movie?
No, it's not any of the scary movies.
I was avoiding Scary Movie because I thought that was the answer.
No, do you want me to tell you?
Give me another hint.
I don't know if there is another hint.
It was a year. A year?
2001. It's known as Sex Academy in Europe. Which is not a hint
sex
at all.
Sex movie.
No, sex movie. No.
Sex Drive, not 2001.
No.
Yeah, just go ahead and tell me. No.
It is not another teen movie.
Ooh, not another teen movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of, should really saw that coming.
One of his earlier early movie roles. But anyway, let's go ahead and play your new game that you've come up with. Up Your Specs, is it?
Yes, it's Know Your Specs, but I prefer to call it Up Your Specs.
Okay.
I'm a dirty... Duty man.
We'll kick in that game show music.
All right, welcome to Know Your Specs, the game where confidence can win or ruin the day. I'd like to welcome our guest, Ben Pearson. Let me give you the rules right up front here. Each contestant, or one contestant for today, is given three categories, and you can choose one of the categories that you are more confident in guessing, year, director, or star. Then, I give you the name of the movie. You'll then have to guess that movie's year, director, or star. Year, of course, referring to the year of the film's release. The director is, of course, the director of the film. And the star is the first listed actor in the book Video Hound's Golden Movie Retriever, a complete guide to movies on all home entertainment formats. I assume beta as well. That is first build. Let's begin. We have our guest, Ben Pearson, straight off a vacation from Poland, was it? Warsaw?
Florida.
Florida, okay, excuse me. We have three categories, year, director, or star.
All right.
As you guess each category, it is omitted. Mm-hmm. I found that, you know, somebody will pick the same category again and again. I can't have that.
Yeah.
So which category do you think you're more confident in guessing? The year of a movie, the director, or the star of a movie?
Let's go
then.
Director.
Director. All right, I have a movie from 2011. 2005 or 2009?
Ooh. Let's go 2011.
2011. The movie is No Strings Attached.
That is... Ivan Reitman.
That is correct. Ivan Reitman did direct 2011's No Strings Attached. Very good. You've checked off the director category. Let me just make a sidebar here. The idea for this game kind of stemmed from the Doug Loves Movies, Leonard Maltin. Don't don't seem to be using words correctly today. I'm going to be fired from this job. The Leonard Maltin game, very famous movie reviewer. Doug Benson uses it. He lets the people choose it by year. That's kind of where I got to use it.
Yeah. Okay.
I cite my work. Yeah. Between the two remaining categories, year and star, which one do you are you more confident in guessing the answer to?
Let's go star.
Ooh, star. I have a movie from 1952, 2006, or 1989.
Wow. Let's go 1952, just because I know I'm not going to get it, but you have to have thrown that in there for a reason. So.
It's legitimately easy if you ever stepped inside. A movie museum.
Go ahead.
1952's The Quiet Man.
I'm gonna say John Wayne.
That is correct. You are on fire.
Yes.
NBA jams. That is what the fake 16-bit announcer would say.
Yep.
John Wayne. That is pretty sharp.
Okay. So let's go with year.
All right. We have year. Of course, I can't give you any choices for the year.
Yep.
So I am going to choose which one I think is a little bit harder, because you've already guessed. You've come to the third round.
Yep.
What year did the movie The Fugitive come out?
Ooh.
Year.
I really want to say 1993.
Oh! You are sweeping the bases, sir. Triple play.
Nice.
1993, The Fugitive, starring Harrison Ford as... you know, that guy who's...
The doctor.
Old. Spoiler alert.
Dr. Richard Kimball.
Richard Kimball. I was getting to that. I was remembering after you said that. And, of course, the One-Eyed Man. I believe Tommy Lee Jones was in that, who reprised his character in U.S. Marshals.
Yes.
That's nice. Let's keep playing. I'm going to go director here.
Okay.
2009, he's just not that into you.
Ooh.
Ed, I'm gonna have to ask you. Just not that anymore.
Is it
your?
Okay, let me ask a hint. Is it a woman?
Yeah.
Is it a female director?
From the first name, no, I don't think so. Although a woman could be called this, I don't know. I'm gonna say I'm 85% sure it's a man.
Because I was gonna say Nora Ephron, but I don't think that's right. So I don't really know. Go ahead.
Looking back to a previous episode.
Yeah.
Ken Kwapis.
Ooh, no, never would have got that.
Let's go star here.
Okay.
Who is the star of 2006's Running Scared?
Oh, that would be Paul Walker, sir.
Yeah, boom, getting it. I like getting it better. Steel Magnolias, 1989. Who was the star of Steel Magnolias?
Ooh, Sally Field?
That is correct, Sally Field. I would have gone Dolly Parton on that.
Mm.
But that's just me. I'm the host. I created the game, so I am immune to having to guess. The year that the movie The Devil's Advocate.
1997?
That is correct. You are going Robin Hood on this target. The year for the film A Clockwork Orange.
Ooh.
Controversial film, I believe. The patient was shown a rape while having his eyelids pried open.
Yeah, I want to say 1979.
Ooh, 8 years off.
Ooh, ouch.
I don't know, plus or minus 8 years.
I don't know which way. I'm going to say minus.
Correct answer, yes. 1971, 8 years prior to 1979 again. The director for the film, 2005's Fun with Dick and Jane, starring the incomparable Tay Leone and the always replaceable Jim Carrey.
It's some hack, I think.
Coming out guns blazing.
Who directed that? That's a garbage movie. It's not Brett Ratner. It's somebody God similar cares. To that. It's not Gore Verbinski, is it?
No.
Okay, because I would have been really regretting my statement, because I don't think he's a hack. I'm not sure. Who is it?
Seen Pirates of the Caribbean 2?
I loved Rango, though. So, who was it?
It was Dean Parasot.
I never have heard that name.
Dean Parasot, very famous in the hack circles. They do exist, though.
I apologize to Dean Parasot. I thought he was more of... I thought it was somebody else, so I don't know. I don't want to speak ill of that man's filmography.
Parasot begins now. Year One. That's it. That is up my specs, or up your specs, or up the specs. Specs, of course, is short for specifications.
Right.
Ben, you rocked. You rocked. Literally rocked this game's world.
Literally.
You made love to this game, and it will never forget you.
That's fantastic.
Very good. Very good. I thought I could stump you. I know I had some easy ones in there, but you stepped over the easy ones and just broke through to the other side.
This is a really cool game. I like it a lot, so good stuff. Nice Merv Griffin skills on that one.
Thank you. I do need that. I need that ego boost.
Yes. All right. Well, that'll pretty much do it. Why don't we go ahead and go back and forth and tell people where they can find us on the internet this week. Let's start with you.
You can find me right here on this podcast, The Solar Sentinel, Destageddon. That's it.
Cool. You can track me down on Twitter at twitter.com/BenPears. Find me writing very sporadically, unfortunately, these days, at geektyrant.com, filmonic.com, notjustnewmovies.com, the namesake for this podcast. And you can hear me, thank God, now, after like a long break, on the Geek Tyrant weekly podcast. We just posted our most recent episode last night at geektyrant.com, so check that out. Music for our show is provided by George Turner and the Bandits. You can find their music at gtbandits.com. They're also on Twitter and Facebook, so check them out over there. Yes, we will be watching Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time for next week, so feel free to check that out.
Okay, if you don't come back.
Shoot us an email, let us know. Tyler, congratulations again on 50 episodes, I'm going to say.
Yeah, congrats. You too, man.
Pretty cool stuff.
It was a good idea, almost a year ago, let's say.
It was actually, our year anniversary was last Tuesday, so...
Yeah, maybe we can have it after midnight, describing our, where this podcast came from.
Yeah. We'll get that going.
Actually, I'll just tell you the answer.
All right, well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you guys next week.